conservatively, your Midas network right now would probably sell in the 30 to 40 million range. So like, I would say 7 million EBITDA, I mean, 7x EBITDA would be reasonable.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
And I think you could walk away with the thing I didn't ask you, on our form or up front is like, what's the split between you and your brother here on 50/50. Ownership? Y'all are 50-50. Okay. Yeah. And how much third party debt do you have on
$6 million.
$6 million. Okay. So, I mean, if you just roughly ballpark this, let's say you've got a $42 million valuation and minus $6 million third party debt equals, you know, 36.
Some days we keep on rolling. Some days we wanna fold in. And you wanna cash out. And you wanna double down. Real talk, real numbers, real life.
Welcome to Inspired or Acquired. This is the podcast where we talk to small business owners, give them a valuation, and ask them whether they would sell their business or whether they would hold on. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, Brian Beers. You might know him from Twitter. He is buying and acquiring Midas franchises in the Northeast and also developing a new franchise territory that we're excited to hear about. And I'm joined by my co-host, Clint Fiore. So Clint, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Great. Brian, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, we're going to just dig right into this. So if you can tell us, you know, in 1 or 2 minutes, a little bit about what your business is, where you're located and, what you provide.
Yeah, sure. So we're in the Philadelphia area. You know, pretty much been here my whole life, except going down to college in Miami for a few years. And so the business today, I guess I'll start to 40 years back. So my dad got into the Midas business in the 70s. Him and my granddad grew it from, you know, one location, you know, back then it was all like mufflers, to 6 locations. And he kind of did that for 30 years. And that was like his, you know, he was the manager, the district manager, you know, wore all the hats. And you know, then, you know, over the years, the business evolved a lot, right? It went from just mufflers to like total car care, low price oil changes, tires, all these things. And, you know, by, you know, a certain point, they were getting older and just kind of getting ready to get out of it. 08, 09 had been rough and they were looking to sell it and weren't making any money, by that and just, you know, ready to move on, right? It's the classic story that you guys know very well. And so I graduated college and I said, hey, instead of you guys selling it, like, let me see, you know, I've always been entrepreneurial. I've always like had all these other, you know, businesses and stuff in college and said, let me see if I can breathe some life into it. So I joined the business. I travel around the country. I meet with other franchisees. I try to figure out like what's working, you know, that you guys are having success that we can, you know, we can emulate. And so that starts to happen, right? Start to change the culture. We drive sales, we hire better people. Like, you know, I kind of breathe all this new life into it. You know, fast forward 6 years, you know, I don't own anything. I'm an employee. But you know, I want to make more money and saying, listen, the only way we're going to make more money is we own more stores that, you know, that I own. And so my brother had joined together, you know, we put together 130 grand. We got a bank loan. We bought plus a bank loan to buy 2 existing locations, like in our market, ran it all as one company, but it was like, you know, we own 2, you know, the original company was 6. And then, you know, we just kind of took the money we made on the 2 and just kept compounding it. And so we bought another one in 17, we bought another one in 18. We opened one in 18 from scratch. We did another one in 19. And then, so we have like 12 locations at this point, 6 and 6, something like that. 2021 comes along. There's a guy in New Jersey, just like my dad, been in forever, wanting to get out. So we did a seller finance deal. We bought his 7 locations in a single day. So like, we went from whatever 12 to 19, and then that opened the door to buy 4 more. Cause you know, once we're in the market, it's, you know, these things become easier as you start to get bigger. And then we did another transaction buying a bunch more. So, and bought my dad out and uncle. So as of today, we have 33 locations kind of in the Philadelphia and about an hour and a half north and east in New Jersey and another market. And, yeah, we have 200 employees. We did about almost $42 million in revenue last year. And
that is just an incredible
what the business looks like. So anyway, for my brother and I, it started with $130,000 that we've just compounded and, you know, continue to buy and seller finance and creative, you know, bank loans and, you know, all the leverage and all the buttons. But that's the amazing thing in the franchise world is franchisees want to sell to other franchisees, which we can talk about later. And it creates this very unique buy-in opportunity for people who are good performers. Like, you get first dibs, sometimes the only dibs, and you can get some amazing deals, you know, in the systems. So anyhow,
amazing. That's what a run. So story. Up to 33 locations now, 42 million top line and EBITDA of...
It's funny. I don't look at only the business brokers like EBITDA. And so I'd say on an EBITDA, about 6 million.
All right. 6 million. So Clint, being the business broker, being the researcher that he is, Clint, what are you thinking on valuation?
Yeah. So I like to just kind of jump right to the punchline here with these. And I would estimate that conservatively, your Midas network right now would probably sell in the 30 to 40 million range. So like, I would say 7 million EBITDA, I mean, 7x EBITDA would be reasonable.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I think you could walk away with, the thing I didn't ask you on our form or up front is like, what's the split between you and your brother here on 50/50. Ownership? 50-50. You all are 50-50? Okay. Yeah. And how much third-party debt do you have on
$6 million.
$6 million. Okay. So, I mean, if you just roughly ballpark this, let's say you've got a $42 million valuation and minus $6 million third-party debt equals, you know, 36, and then you might have a couple million of costs to sell or something like that, and then you've got 50-50 with your bro. So you might be able to
taxes,
walk.
Taxes are a huge part.
Yeah.
Right?
So if you sold today, you know, you might have, you know, $30 million of equity value, pre-tax. And then you also could maybe sweep some cash if you've got excess cash in the operating account of the business, that could pad that a little bit more. A lot of people would say that's set for life kind of money there, Brian. Like, mm-hmm. that, I mean, that's,
yeah.
That's yeah, definitely an awesome position to be in, especially as a young man. And I just know you through Twitter. I've been enjoying following your journey and seeing you build this. And so part of the show is we just like to zoom out and say like, all right, if this is roughly what your business is worth right now, a lot of listeners are thinking, holy crap, I could be set for life on that type of, if I had built that kind of business network. Are you thinking, all right, maybe it's time to pull the trigger on let's think about a sale here or let's keep growing.
I mean, we thought about it, right? I get the private equity guys in my DMs, right? Like, I think, you know, putting yourself out there. I mean, people understand the value. And that's like, yeah, that's the around the, what we've thought. I mean, we've heard higher numbers. A lot of it, there's a lot of factors that influence, right? You know, but then like part of it is like the people who build good companies aren't the ones that say, oh, I'm just going to like sit around and do nothing, right? You're always going to like, there's always the other mountain to climb. And it's just like, you know, you're ultimately trading one thing for another thing. And so, and also like, I know we have a lot of runway. I believe we could double our profits, like, or I believe we could get to 8 to 10 million with not any other acquisitions. Like we have stores and this is the thing with multi-unit, right? Like you have stores that are winners. Like I have stores that make like a ton of money and I have probably 6 stores that cumulatively lose $500,000 a year. Because we bought a lot of, you know, it's really easy to buy a store that's losing money or a business that's losing money, right? And so part of it as it becomes easier, because like I can withstand losses, right? Because I've got this big thing, right? And a lot of these stores, you know, it's recent growth. And then it takes time to get them turned around. And so like, you know, we took over a store that for 10, used to be the number 2 store in the market. 10 years ago, we had the number 1 store, it was the number 2 store. And then for the last 10 years, it's been beaten down with, you know, whatever manager after manager and whatever, just not having the focus. So we bought this thing September. Of course, we got a great deal on it. It's lost probably about $100,000 since then. But like just now, we finally got a good team in there. And like, you know, we'll be profitable this month. And like, we'll get that store to probably making, you know, 200 plus a year. And so part of it is like, I'm willing to withstand the losses because I know like our systems work when we get the right people and the right systems. And so like, like I can get another $500,000 of EBITDA just by getting my stores to not lose, you know, five stores to not lose money, let alone to then make 500, right? So now we have $1 million swing on just five locations, let alone getting the other one. So like, that's kind of where we're at too, is saying like, yeah, we could, but like we could also like just continue the path we're on. And like that number could double.
That's a great segue, Brian, because the other thing we like to do on this show is kind of show the potential here. So what I just gave you was a rough ballpark, and I think it was probably conservative of what I think you'd sell for today and what you could potentially walk away with pre-tax. I also like to give a picture, and Patrick has a model he can pull up here and we can walk through, because we like to figure out kind of like, where could this system get you in the next 5 years?
Yep.
In terms of enterprise value? And I wanted to ask you some questions just on, what do you think is, you know, at the strategy you're doing right now with the 42 million top line, like what do we think an annual growth rate that's you could sustain for the next 5 years might look like?
12% a year with the no additional stores.
Okay.
As a reasonable.
And do you think you'd be able to keep the margins similar to where they're at now?
Yeah, we didn't ask what your average ticket is or what your margins are.
Yeah, so go up a little bit. It's a little bit reversed. So it's about a 50% there, and then the overhead's probably a little closer to like, 16 okay. million, a little bit higher on the higher side. And so, in ours, like, you know, we have a heavy fixed cost, right? We've got big leases, we've got utilities, we've got like, you know, a retail business, right? We've got like a certain amount of staff that's there no matter what. But then once we cover those costs, like, you know, a lot more of falls to the bottom line. I mean, by our estimates, you know, 40% of incremental sales falls to the bottom line, assuming it's, you know, normal things. So from our view, it's like, if we can add $10 million in revenue, right? That's potentially $4 million of incremental bottom line.
Yeah. So like, if you can't see this visual, you know, 12% top line over the next 5 years, you'd end up, make sure I'm not missing the decimal place here. We're talking 134 million top line. I'm not sure how many stores that might end up being, if that's, you know, I don't know, 80, 90 stores. But if you kept similar margin profile, you'd have 26.8 million falling to the bottom line. Clint, I don't know if you feel at all comfortable with ballparking that valuation. You know, what that might look like.
I think as you continue to climb into new levels of EBITDA and new levels of just locations here, Brian. Yeah. And so, I would think conservatively, if you were able to do that type of sustained 5-year growth rate, you know, you may end up in the 10 to 15x EBITDA multiple range, which could be, you know, Patrick just did the math there. 300 million or more in enterprise value. And so to me, this just shows the tremendous 1-2 combination of the compound annual growth plus multiple expansion equals, you know, kind of exponential growth in enterprise value. And that's part of the fun of this. And so, I mean, that looks a lot different, right? Like 30, 40 million versus several hundred million. Does this, Brian, are you selling in 5 years here? Like what's your thing?
We don't necessarily have, you know, we've talked about it, right? Like my brother, of course we've talked about it, but it's just more like, I don't know. There's a lot of factors that go into it. If it makes sense. And then we kind of look at, you know, the after tax is like super important, because it's, you know, the pre-tax number sounds good, but then the true number is the after tax. And then, you know, then it's split, and then it's like, all right, well, we walk away with this amount of money versus like, I continue to grow this thing. Like I could potentially make that money in a few years. Right. And so I don't know. Part of it is that, and then it's also like, well, what am I going to do with the money, and can I get a better return? Like, what's the goal? Right. And if the goal is just, hey, I want to like grab the bag, and then I'm okay with a lower return. The other alternative is saying, well, how about we take some of that money and like we invest it in better people that like completely take over the business for us, right? And that we're paying very high quality people. So then, like, you know, the business isn't providing a ton of stress. It's not taking a ton of time, right? It's stable. Like, we have these systems in place, And then it's, you know, like that's a pretty appealing thing too, to say, I don't really care about having this big nut versus like, you know, consistent monthly cash flow and a really good team and resiliency and then always still having that option. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's like, we think about like, that's kind of the angle we're thinking about now, is trying to put leadership into place that replaces me and him. So that we can, then we can continue to focus on like, you know, bigger and higher value things.
Next layer I want to peel back on this onion, Brian, is kind of just like, what makes you tick, man? Cause this is a decision, and this is really the core of this show. It's called Inspired or Acquired. And we're trying to figure out, are you inspired to keep this business for the long term because it's going to get you to where you ultimately want to be in life? Or are you feeling like where I want to go in life kind of needs to secure a financial liquidity event? And I think it would be better for me to move towards an, you know, being acquired now or in the next 5 years. And so we're trying to get to that. And I think this is the one of the neatest parts of this idea, is we're trying to get into the head of these successful entrepreneurs that are empire building and saying like, why? Like, why do you keep going? What makes you tick? And is this business going to get you there? So do you think, you know, 5 years from now, once you've got, let's say hypothetically, half of a $300+ million empire, are you going to be motivated to keep pushing as hard as you are and now, and why?
That's a good question. I don't know, you know, that's a different level. But even now I think about my life and like, I have everything. Like I can buy anything I want. Like I don't, and there's things like I don't care about. There's things I don't care about, right? So like I don't care about buying them, but like, you know, I have a lot of freedom.
Are you telling us you're not a big car guy?
Yeah, yeah. I don't care about cars. I have a, you know, 5 year old, well, I have a BMW, but it's like 5 years old, you know, and I'm fine with it. Like, and I don't need a boat. Like a plane could be cool. I know Flint's got his planes, but my wife would never go in a prop plane.
So between you and your brother, is one of you more like driver visionary? And the
yeah, me. Yeah.
That's you.
And so anyway, I think about just, I don't know. It's just in general, right? Like, you know, we have a great house. We've renovations. We've got like, you know, we have a private chef that cooks meals every week. We've got like all this stuff, right? And so part of me just thinks in general, like I do it then not necessarily because I want to make more money, but it's more about like, what do I enjoy, right? And like business is my hobby. Like I play golf, but I don't really care about playing. I like to be outside, but that's about it. You know, I don't play tennis. Like I go to the gym, but like, I don't really have hobbies, right? My hobbies, like I love big business and I've always been like that. And to me, it's just a matter of like, you know, are there new problems and are there things I enjoy solving? And even now, like I enjoy like, honestly, like it's trying to build the social media and the like franchise education and like, all the stuff like that, like business is more fun to me right now just because it's a new challenge and something, and it's something that's like, I want to learn the game. I want to learn how to win. And so like, I that's what drives me. It's not making more money. Like to be honest, at a certain point, the money becomes the easiest part. Once you learn the games, right? Like yep. I could easily go out and buy 50. I have a friend who's got a bunch of shops and would sell for the right number. I could easily call up one of these private equity guys and say, hey, this guy wants to sell, like, let's do the platform deal. Let's buy him out. But then like, I don't know. Do I really want to own stores all over the country and then have plane rides and time zones and like all this stuff? Like I don't, like part of me says like that would like just complicate my life more than, you know, just continuing to build here locally, you know, diversify into some of these asset light businesses, hire really good people that really run a lot of the day to day. So like, I'm not tied into the weeds and I can focus on the bigger, you know, the kind of the more fun stuff for me as the visionary. Or like, I think about it kind of like more like that than I'm trying to get to 150 or, you know, whatever.
Got it.
The lifestyle of being able to have that freedom over your time, staying at the 30,000 foot level with this network and not have to travel yep. against your will across the country kind of is what's landed you on this strategy to let's stick to one or two industries that we can wash, rinse, repeat this model and really master and keep a geographic focus of kind of in this region so that, you know, because none of this is passive, you know, this is an active business that you've got yep. to really work hard and the things hit the fan and sometimes you got to show up, right? And
yeah.
And fix things and do things. And so for you, it's like you're finding that balance of living where you want to live, having the life you want to have, but still enjoying the game for the sake of the game because you enjoy business.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And I'd say like, even if it's the geographical thing, I think is probably the most critical side of it. And because for me, like the bigger my world gets, the more opportunities get created for the people who are within my world, right? And so like we launched this painting business that, you know, we bought all of Philly. And the guy who I have running it to help me build it from the ground up worked for me in Midas. He's worked for me for 7 years. Like he was one of my multi-unit like district guys. So like he's running that business and structurally the same exact way that we run the Midas business. So it's comfortable, right? And we're just like, it's a different industry, but it's like it's sales, it's marketing, it's technical people. Like it's actually a very similar business model in a lot of ways. We're just in a different industry, but it feels very comfortable. And so part of me says, well, we will have a guy in that painting business who will rise up, who like maybe we just expand a little bit in the painting, or we say, hey, let's get into roofing. Roofing is the exact same model. It's contractor based. It's marketing. We do door to door and painting. We're doing door to door and roofing. So I know that like as people shine in my organization and I can give them opportunities to make a lot of money and have for them to have more freedom and more purpose, it's way easier than to promote from within, right? And have this solid team and like get everybody together in person versus saying, hey, I'm going to go like into 4 different time zones and I'm going to have stuff all over the place. And like, and then everybody's really disconnected. And I think it's, you know, it becomes harder to build, at least from a culture and just like, you know, the this idea of people, we can hire people and they can see, like we can tell them a story of a bigger future that they can have, which attracts talented people, right?
I have a few, you want to go, Patrick? I had a couple other questions. I feel like I'm almost ready to stamp this one inspired. You know, if we're going to say like, where does Brian fall? Like he sounds like, if I'm putting on my broker hat, I'm like, I want to be friends with this guy, but I'm not going to pursue like trying to convince him to sell anytime soon. Because for me as a broker, like I need somebody that has a real reason they want to sell and they need to be motivated to like, they've got some other vision they're trying to get to and selling is what's going to get them to that other vision. And it feels like Brian's living an integrated life where he's got kind of his vision of how he likes to live and where he wants to go incorporated well with his business strategy. So hats off to you, Brian. Like there's not a lot of entrepreneurs that are kind of living that, you know, that congruency, I guess, between your vision of where you ultimately want to go and your business growth strategy. So I think you're doing a great job there. But I think at some point that always changes and can change. The big question I wanted to ask is 50-50 partnership with your brother. You're one half of this business, essentially. If your brother was in the hot seat, would he be answering these questions the same way? And how will you approach it if the day comes where one of you says, you know what, I'm done, like I'm ready to be acquired, and the other says, you know, I might not be done, like I think I want to keep doing this. Like what's your plan there, and do you think you're pretty equally yoked right now on?
Yeah, we're pretty equally. I think he would accept a lower number than I would. I think, I don't know, he might accept that number that you threw out. I mean, my number's higher. But he sees what I see too, that like, we know there's a lot of low hanging fruit. We know like we have a lot of runway, like totally just from our own abilities and the things that are already happening. And so like right now it's fine. Yeah. I mean, I could see in the future. But I think we're pretty aligned on a lot of things. I think both of us would, if we both felt it was right. And honestly, a big part of it is like, we have really good people. Like we have a really good leadership team. And like part of it for me is feeling that like, you know, am I letting them down by selling, right? Or is it the opposite where I'm enabling them, where now they get to rise up into a higher level, they get to make more money, right? Because you know they're now even more critical. You know, it all depends on the buyer, right? And all that. And so I think honestly that is probably my bigger concern than it is what me and him think. It's more of like, we have really good people, and you know, I'm really proud of that. And it's more of, we want to make sure that like the success continues for everybody that's involved.
That's incredible. I mean, that's like awesome to have that viewpoint and be able to create opportunities for people and, you know, within the organization as well as these new brands that you're launching. So it's super impressive. If people aren't following you on Twitter, they need to, you know, just looking at some of the things that you share around, you know, how you turn these stores around and the unit economics of each store and, you know, how you can improve the sell through and know your gross margin at the store level. Makes all the difference, right? To get that store that was struggling to turn it into a profitable one. And then, be able to, you know, roll on to the next deal. So it's an incredible lesson that you're sharing here.
Cool. Yeah, thank you.
You said earlier you've got 200 employees. I think that's a huge responsibility. And I like that you're there at the forefront of your mind. I think a great reason to sell or not sell is your opinion. If you're able to like remove yourself from the ego of saying, I'm Mr. Big Important Business Owner here, and kind of just take a detached view, zoom out and say, if I wasn't Brian and I'm just an alien looking at Brian leading this organization, do I think Brian's the best owner? Is he giving the best future to these 200 people? And it's not just 200 people, it's 200 families.
Yep. Yeah.
And their dependents. And it has this massive ripple effect on all these lives. And I think if you can honestly look down and say, you know, I meet owners that one day they wake up and realize I might be holding these people back. You know, I might be the one that's limiting our growth because I may be playing defense now instead of offense. And I might be limiting their opportunities. And I think these people might be better served with someone that's ready to keep going to the next level and letting them keep grow. That can be a good signal for a legitimate reason that you're ready to sell. But if you can look down and say, you know what, I think I would be doing a disservice. You know, like these folks are not going to be as well served by some, you know, arm's length buyer that's doing this mainly as a financial transaction. And I think that I'm going to be giving way more opportunities for advancement and for them to grow their worlds and their lives and their families here, then that's a great reason to stay inspired, you know, and keep your hand to the plow and keep growing. So it sounds like you're doing that. Really proud of you, man. And really appreciate you being brave to like share your real numbers, what makes you tick, and come on the show. Cause I think it's going to be invaluable learning for folks that are listening in.
Cool. Yeah. I appreciate the invite. And like I said, I've owned my whole life, you know, all of it makes it possible because it's, you know, within the kind of franchise world and this space that we live in. And, you know, I've kind of figured out how to, you know, how to play the game. Right. And it's, and so it's changed my life. And I like sharing the story and showing people what's possible. A lot of people think franchising small, you buy yourself a job, or they think it's like totally unattainable. And there's this whole world that lives in between. And so there's people that live it every day. And, you know, one of my goals is just to help shine light on that. So.
Great. How can people find you and connect with you, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, Twitter is the best place. At Brian Beers with an I would be the where I'm most active. And then, you know, I've got a newsletter I write every, you know, twice a week now on you know, kind of how we scale our business and tactical stuff. I mean, bonus plans. I talk about, you know, people, hiring practices, you know, things that I'm seeing kind of in the marketplace. I'm like a pretty tactical guy. Like, so I don't have a lot of fluff and just try to get right to it.
Well, we appreciate you having you on the show. So everyone check him out on Twitter and follow him. And Brian, we'll be in touch.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.